Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome in, everybody, to the Flagship Podcast. I am Chip Brown of Horns247.com, joined, as always, by my esteemed colleague at Horns247, the one and only Eric Henry. Eric, we are recording on Tuesday, January 30th. We are 2 days removed from learning that the Longhorns will have representatives in the Super Bowl for the 18th time in the last 19 years. Thanks to Charles Omenihu, who makes a huge play in the AFC Championship game with a strip sack of Lamar Jackson, and then later tears his ACL and will not be able to partake in the Super Bowl, which is just awful because he signed a 2-year, $16 million free agent deal with the Chiefs and had a career high 7 sacks this season, including that strip sack of Lamar Jackson. And on the other side, it will be Kyle Shanahan, former Longhorns wide receiver, son of legendary NFL coach Mike Shanahan, now getting ready to coach in his third Super Bowl, Eric, because his 49ers took advantage of my Lions head coach, Dan Campbell, losing his mind and not trying to kick field goals and take points on the road, not give the other team any source of momentum, up 24-10. But no, Dan Campbell wanted to go for it. He went for it, gave the 49ers that momentum, and Kyle Shanahan and a bunch of other craziness that happened, like a ball bouncing off the hands and face mask of a lion into the hands of Brandon Ayuk for a 51-yard reception that set up a touchdown. But Eric, how are you doing?
CB, I am doing well, not going to lie. Fighting the struggle bus a little bit here. As you mentioned, we are taping this here on Tuesday, and that is coming off of a overtime contest at Moody Center, which we will certainly get into later in this podcast. But for the purposes of me being on the struggle bus, it meant that I did not leave Moody Center until after midnight last night. So got a couple cups of coffee here. You know, we're trying to make it work. We're trying to ramp up the energy here. You know, Chip Brown is all the man needs is, you know, is what are you, Diet Coke or Diet Pepsi guy? Which one are you?
I'm actually a, Coke Zero.
Coke Zero. Okay. I knew it was one of the brands. You know,
I'm trying to let it go, but still Coke Zero.
But there you go. So,
or sparkling water.
Or sparkling water. So yeah. So I'm trying to dial up the energy here because, of course, we are rocking and rolling here on the podcast. And just to quickly touch on what you mentioned there. Yeah, what a weekend of football. The championship game weekend, one of the best weekends of football. In my mind, Chip, I'm a divisional guy, you know, when it comes to the playoffs. I love wild card week. I love divisional. But conference championship weekend certainly up there as well. And yeah, your Lions who beat my Bucks to move on. And I don't know if this has to sting more, the fact that, you know, it's an Aggie, Dan Campbell, and some of his questionable calls. Here's the deal. You know, I know a lot of has been made about analytics and things of that nature. I don't necessarily think, Chip, that those decisions fell into the realm of analytics. I think that fell into a guy who just is, you know, very inexperienced in that moment and saying, hey, I'm going to be, you know, I've got to be Dan Campbell, right? I've got to be the bite your kneecaps off. We're going to go for a fourth down, as they had, you know, been very aggressive all year. But man, sometimes you got to take the points. You know, I mean, listen, and sure, none of those kicks would consider gimmies per se, right? But there's a reason you got the kicker on the roster. Take the points, especially in when Chip, it's playoff football, the margins are tighter, the windows are tighter. You just need to do a little something just to break that momentum and not go, you know, scoreless until, you know, a certain point in that game. So yeah, I'm sure Dan Campbell will learn from it, but for the sake of all Michiganders and, you know, like yourself and longtime Lion fans, it's tough. I mean, I know I'm old enough to, you know, one of the first football games I ever went to as a kid was a 1998-1997 season, Chip. I think I may have mentioned this to you once or twice, but Lions-Bucks, 97, wild card playoff game there that Detroit fell 20-10. So even in my lifetime, I'm old enough to remember one of the few Lions playoff games. And, you know, I'm 32. So you can't guarantee you're going to be back next year. So I can understand why those losses sting.
Well, it was funny. I was texting with Dan Neal, former Longhorn All-American offensive lineman, two-time Super Bowl winner with the Denver Broncos. And he said, the Aggie ended up acting like an Aggie. He said, actually, two of them, because Dan Campbell and Josh Reynolds went to A&M. And I listen, Josh Reynolds, tough situation. You know, it would have been a great catch on the fourth down, the third quarter, fourth down attempt on fourth and two. Then he dropped the third and nine pass that was right in the breadbasket. And you wonder how much of that had to do with not converting on fourth down. Like, did doubt start to creep into Josh Reynolds' mind after he can't hang on to that fourth down pass to the point where he drops the third down pass? It's like, just like the momentum is proportional, but it's less if you miss a field goal. Because, you know, the kicker, okay, all the starters are not out on the field. There's a lot of backups in the special teams, and okay, it's a field goal. If you get stuffed on fourth down, the entire defense gets confidence. And that's a loaded defense. I mean, it's not like you're it just felt like they were tempting fate. But I digress. We will have Longhorns representing in the Super Bowl. And yes, the Aggies, the Longhorn prevailed over the Aggie in the NFC Championship game. So, Eric, we've got, you know, we've got a new defensive line coach since our podcast last week. It is now official. Kenny Baker, who you did a nice job of delving into his time at Western Kentucky. So Kenny Baker, who spent the last season as the assistant defensive line coach for the Miami Dolphins, was at Western Kentucky for three seasons before that, helped develop the Conference USA Defensive Player of the Year, D'Angelo Malone. Tell us about your findings after looking into Kenny Baker's time at Western Kentucky.
Yeah, well, I mean, first off, you know, obviously prior to joining 24/7, I'd covered Conference USA for 6 years, so I was pretty familiar with Kenny Baker, just the name. You know, a lot of coaches in that league, really well-regarded. Shout out to my guy Tyson Helton, by the way, the head coach of Western Kentucky. Appreciate him giving me 20 minutes on a whim. You know, like, it was more than happy to talk about Kenny Baker. But the thing is this, I think, to bring it in terms of what Horns fans are should be expecting, what should be getting. Chip, we've talked about it over the past month, right? That this was going to be a crucial season of development for guys like Alfred Collins, Vernon Broughton, even some of the younger guys, right? Like Colton Vasek, you know, and others.
Aaron Bryant, Zach Swanson, Ray Bledsoe, Sadir Mitchell.
Yeah. Listen, is Kenny Baker Bo Davis? No, right? I mean, Bo Davis has 15 or more years of coaching experience on him at Power 5 level and the NFL and so on and so forth. Kenny Baker is still a rising coach. But what I think that Longhorn fans should feel very comforted in is the fact that this guy has been widely regarded as just, I don't want to put too much hype on him, Chip, and say like he's a coaching prodigy. But the amount of coaches, whether it was, you know, again, Coach Helton, or even I asked, you know, some of the offensive line coaches I dealt with at FIU and some other guys, you know, at Charlotte. And they talked about the fact that Western Kentucky's defensive line were always fundamentally sound and technique. They were not guys who were going to be in the wrong spot at the wrong time. They know how to use their hands. And they felt that a lot of that, first off, you know, that had to do with Jimmy Lindsay, who was the defensive line coach at Western prior to Kenny Baker. And then Kenny Baker advancing that. And I had a quick conversation with D'Angelo Malone of the Atlanta Falcons, who kind of reemphasized something that he said to me even back when we spoke in the Conference USA Media Days 2020, if memory serves me correct, or 2021, it should be 2021 Media Days. And he said, and mind you, Chip, this is a D'Angelo Malone who was coming off of a 99 tackle, 22 tackle for loss, 11 sack season. I can recite those stats off the top of my head. In 2019, that earned him the league's defensive player of the year in 2019.
As a sophomore.
And he said that Kenny Baker, you know, taught him things that he didn't even think he needed to know in terms of his technique. And he really felt that that kind of advanced him as being, you know, a guy who truly was capable to, you know, excel and get drafted in the NFL. Had another guy in Ricky Barber, who is now at UCF in the Big 12. But, you know, Chip, covering football at that level, you get a lot of these guys, these lightly recruited guys. You know, D'Angelo Malone was a 6'3", 215-pound kind of hooper, you know, who wasn't tall enough to be a hooper. So he found his way on the gridiron from Atlanta and landed there. And Ricky Barber's another guy who was 6'3", 6'4", I want to say 230-ish when he got to Western Kentucky, redshirted as a freshman 2019, 2020, you know, we're wondering, oh man, you know, who's this kid who's going to step in and kind of fill there in the middle of their defensive line. All of a sudden ends up being a freshman All-American, and then he jets to UCF and is now playing the Big 12. So I'm just saying all that to say, while the name Kenny Baker might not be, you know, I think it's clear, Chip, to say, and I said this on you know, the boards, it's clear that Kenny Baker was not the first choice, right? But just because this is a name that you're not familiar with or you might not have heard of, really well regarded amongst coaching circles. Again, this is how he got his job. You know, the godfather of defensive line coaches was someone who recommended him to Tyson Helton there in Western Kentucky. So again, I think the defensive line room is in good hands. Another thing, Chip, that I think I was concerned about or just intrigued about was the relationship that guys like AC and Vernon Broughton and others had with a Bo Davis, right? AC said he'd give Bo Davis a shirt off his back. Tyson Helton was adamant. He said, listen, as soon as those guys get to know Kenny, they're going to love him because there is not a room that he walks into and he'll just gravitate towards him and his energy. So all in all, you know, again, appreciate Tyson Helton giving me 20 or so minutes, you know, there on a whim that day. But a lot to like about Kenny Baker, and he'll be making his way here to Austin here pretty quickly.
Yeah. the recommendations for Kenny Baker are impressive. You mentioned Pete Jenkins, who's, you know, considered one of the godfathers of D-line coaches, who has coached everywhere in the SEC from LSU and Florida and Auburn, Mississippi State, that Pete Jenkins is a guy who gives Danny Baker a big endorsement. And he's 37. You know, the people I talked to said he's high energy. He's got a super engaging personality from a recruiting standpoint. And so, look, Steve Sarkisian knows that this is a critical hire. And in some aspects, I've said, for an offensive-minded head coach, the defensive line coach can be as important as your defensive coordinator, because that's the guy who's going to help evaluate, recruit, and develop your trenches and bring the toughness to your football team. That defensive line is, you know, quoting my guy, Dan Neal, you got to have guys who everyone else fears in your defensive line group, because that's going to sharpen up the offensive line. And those are the guys who are going to demand accountability from the rest of the defense. So it's a big hire. It's an important hire, but you also have guys like Pete Kwiatkowski, Johnny Nansen, who've both coached the defensive line at different times in their careers. And so, you know, Steve Sarkisian knows he's got to have a guy who comes in and fits with the rest of the staff and adds to that defensive staff, because, you know, Bo Davis, interesting guy, doesn't love recruiting, but is a guy who has developed a lot of players who've gone on to the NFL. And it was a loss. It was a loss. The timing of it was a loss. It affected a bunch of different things. You know, DeAndre Robinson asking out of his letter. DeAndre Robinson's now enrolled at Florida. You know, Dominic McKinley had interest in Texas, and then he didn't, and now he's at LSU, and Bo Davis is at LSU, or he's committed to LSU. I'm not sure if he has signed yet, heading into this next signing. Well, Wednesday is the next signing period here. So, yeah, it's a big hire. It's an important hire. And we've talked about Johnny Nansen helping to bring in Tia Savea, the defensive tackle from Arizona, who that's a big time get in the portal. From, we talked about it, he's more of a run stuffer than he is maybe a pass rushing defensive tackle. But look, you got to stop the run first. And we know, because we're going to talk about the Senior Bowl here, we'll just transition into that. Senior Bowl practice is going on right now, and Byron Murphy is starting to hit some first round projections. In mock drafts from people, I think, who are respected in the business, Daniel Jeremiah, Bucky Brooks, two guys who work for NFL Network, NFL.com, who've worked in talent evaluation and scouting departments in the NFL. Both of them have Byron Murphy going in the first round, and Bucky Brooks has Byron Murphy and Tavondre Sweat going in the first round. So I think people are starting to appreciate, at the NFL level, they're starting to appreciate just how good Texas had it this past season with the two highest rated interior defensive linemen in FBS, according to Pro Football Focus, playing on the same defensive line, Eric.
Chip, I mean, there's no shock to me in terms of Byron Murphy. We take a look at a guy who's 6'1", what, 310, 315-ish, you know, and how many times did we hear players start with him being one of the strongest people on the team? You know, as you were talking, I've been trying to rack my brain for an NFL comp, and I don't necessarily have a great one, just because I think his sheer power combined with his athleticism is something that, you know, Chip, I'd be really interested to see what Byron Murphy does in some of those, you know, athletic drills like three cone and shuttle and things like that, to kind of see his short area quickness. Because again, you know, maybe it's me being a Tampa homer, but the first person who comes to mind is someone who can kind of wreck in the interior of that defensive line is like a Warren Sapp type, maybe even a Gerald McCoy type. But A, he's smaller than McCoy, and B, he's probably much stronger than Warren Sapp ever was. Warren Sapp was a guy who, while certainly a game wrecker, uses his athleticism for that era, right, Chip? You know, in that era, he was an uber-athletic DT, so I've been trying to rack my brain for a comp, but nevertheless, Chip,
Well, for those of us watching on the YouTube channel, that body looks a lot like Aaron Donald. Like, 300-pounders are not supposed to be ripped with just perfect symmetry. There's not any sloppiness on that frame. And this Chip, is
I didn't want to go Aaron Donald because Aaron Donald's a little bit bigger than Murph, isn't he? Aaron Donald's about 6'3"-ish.
No. No, okay. he's a fire hydrant too. So let me double check that though.
Yeah, I could be wrong because maybe it's just the sheer frame. If you ever see Aaron Donald shirtless, that makes him seem as if he's bigger. Because I in my head I had Aaron Donald closer to
6'1".
He's 6'1". Okay,
he's listed at so.
Yeah,
and listen, Aaron Donald was up. I mean, he was a freak, but I'm telling you, watch out, Byron Murphy.
No doubt about it. And I mean, to your point, Chip. NFL teams realizing how good Texas had it. That guy lined up to Tavondre, lined up next to Tavondre Sweat. I mean, that just goes to show you. And I mean, listen, we can use it as a segue into some of the things we've talked about in the past, and I'm sure we'll continue to talk about, right? Is how good those two guys were. We should probably level set when it comes to Alfred Collins and Vernon Broughton, right? That, listen, there's only so good you can be. So it probably necessitates the need for the rest of the defensive line to raise its play. And also a guy who we'll talk about, like Tia Savea, to be, you know, a little bit more of a dependable presence, dependent upon presence. Because you can't ask, excuse me, AC and Broughton to be those guys and type of game wreckers they were this year.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, Aaron Donald, it's funny, Byron Murphy, 6'1", 308. Aaron Donald, 6'1", 284. And I'm just telling you, that body, that frame is almost a ringer for Aaron Donald. Because I remember when Donald came out, he's 32 now. He's been in the league 10 years, but which is amazing. Doesn't seem that long ago, but when he came into the league, I remember seeing him with his, you know, shirt off, combine, whatever, and I was like, you're not supposed to look like that at 300 pounds. But yeah, Byron Murphy has spent basically 3-4 days in Mobile, Alabama, and his stock is soaring. So everybody can check out the Senior Bowl this weekend. You got Jalen Ford in Mobile. And I just had this little list up. But you've got...
Chip, just to double check, I'll let you go ahead and check on that, because when we checked the Senior Bowl rosters, saw that the only two Longhorns who were there were Byron Murphy and Christian Jones. Of course, Jalen Ford and Jordan Whittington, and there's another one that I'm missing off the top of my head who accepted invites.
Christian Jones.
Yeah, they accepted invites but are no longer on the roster. So I'll let you just check that really quick. But when I checked yesterday, Jalen Ford and Jay Witt were not on the roster anymore.
Oh wow, that's interesting. Yeah, they accepted their invitations, but they are not there.
Right.
Interesting. Well, bottom line is we know that Byron Murphy is having an impact. So this will be fun to watch over the weekend. And that leads us into our next topic, Eric, and that is replacing guys like Byron Murphy, Tavondre Sweat. We in the Insider did a top 10 hardest players to replace. No surprise. Number one, Tavondre Sweat, and Alfred Collins is going to be a guy who gets a look there. Alfred Collins actually probably has more in common with Byron Murphy. He was a better pass rushing defensive lineman than Tavondre Sweat. Maybe Vernon Broughton actually ends up being the replacement for T Sweat, and Alfred Collins ends up being the replacement for Byron Murphy. But those are the top two guys that Texas has to replace.
Chip, I thought you did a great job with the list. You talked about the top two. I'm going to go ahead and just call one that I thought was pretty interesting to me. You know, you talk about David Benda. And it's someone you had him at number six. You talk about the Pro Football Focus numbers, actually grading him just a tick higher than Jalen Ford at linebacker. Now, of course, you know, that gets a little bit tricky, right? Because of course, you know, what Jalen was asked to do versus what Ben was asked to do, you know, two different things and so on and so forth. But nevertheless, I did find Benda getting him back. I thought that was an interesting addition on your part. You talk about Amari Nyblack in terms of, you know, needing someone who you're going to have to run two tight end sets, Texas, right? You know, Gunnar Helm, obviously someone who's developed this year, but you know how much Sark loves his two tight end sets. And one that I think goes a little bit under the radar, because we'll have to see if this is something that gets addressed or if we're just going to stand put. That's Michael Kern. Comes from a really good program. St. Thomas Aquinas down there. For those who may not know, a legendary program down there in Broward County, Fort Lauderdale, you know, produced Michael Irvin and just countless. I couldn't even run off the list of, you know, over 100 guys that probably put in D1 the past decade or so. But, you know, at least for Horns fans, it should be comforted the fact that he's a guy who has kicked in, at least in the high school level, in big games, right? And comes from a really good program. He's not just getting a kid, you know, who's got a big leg from a public school, you know, who hasn't done it on big time stages. But that's one thing that's going to be interesting, Chip. You know, I mean, listen. All things considered, we know Texas has seemingly the pieces to run it back and make a push. And you got to have all your fort secured and held down. Michael Kern, if he is going to be the punter, especially someone who's not getting here early, see how he adapts.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we talk about the offensive players who need to be replaced. And you mentioned Amari Nyblack. You've got Matthew Golden coming in from Houston, who's, you know, kind of got the same. Well, Chris Jackson told me at the Sugar Bowl media day that he said, this is a quote, he said, he's going to be a perfect NFL caliber kickoff returner, and he's going to be an NFL caliber receiver for us. So my job is to try to get him in and out of here, a lot like A.D. Mitchell. Golden has been incredibly productive. I mean, Texas fans remember that because he caught 7 balls for 88 yards and 2 touchdowns against the Longhorns in the 31-24 win at Houston this past season. But he's... you know, he's been productive. He's not had any less than 6 touchdown catches in a season in his 2 years at Houston. And tough-minded guy, not a real vocal guy, more of a do-it-by-example guy, but really, you know, really talented ball skills, good route runner, smart, tough, can run all the routes over the middle. And then... you know, you've got Xavier Worthy moving on. You've got Jordan Whittington moving on. And you've got Isaiah Bond coming in from Alabama and Silas Bolden coming in from Oregon State and Jonte Cook, who is a guy I think Steve Sarkisian really likes. And he only had 8 catches in 2023. But he averaged 17 yards a catch. Two of them, he had a 51 yarder against Baylor, a 26 yarder against Kansas. Were both kind of breathtaking with the way that the guy just caught, you know, balls in stride, yards after catch. But, you know, I think Cook is the heir apparent to Worthy. And then, you know, Isaiah Bond is going to be, he ran, I think, half his snaps at Alabama this past season out of the slot. So, you know, DeAndre Moore, Ryan Niblett, Isaiah Bond, and there's going to be really good competition for that slot receiver. And obviously Sark wants these receivers to be able to line up anywhere and sort of be positionless, but that's going to be fun to watch in the spring, Eric.
No doubt about it. And it's just, you know, Chip, we've talked about on the podcast, it's funny how when we ended the season or we were prepping for the end of the year, we're looking at, man, Texas is going to have to replace, you know, this many receptions and leading the five leading guys at receiver. And now you go into it and you feel like this is a strength, and not only a strength, Chip, the ceiling, to quote the old Michael Jordan line, right? The ceiling is the roof. When he said that at North Carolina, still one of my funniest, you know, thing to hear someone say, but nevertheless, you get the point, right? You go into this year feeling like, man, this wide receiver room can be one of the tops in the nation. So definitely look forward to seeing some of that competition out there and we get spring ball.
Well, and I got to say this, you know, Jonathan Brooks is moving on, and Texas did not go in the portal looking for a running back because they've got CJ Baxter and Jaden Blue. But the minute that Tashard Choice, I asked him for a comp for Jaden Blue and he said Jahmyr Gibbs, I'm like, okay, Jaden Blue. I mean, 6.1 a carry this year, Eric. I mean, look, they need two backs. They need two backs. I'm not trying to cause any stir here, but if the comp for Jaden Blue is Jahmyr Gibbs, who Tashard Choice helped recruit to Georgia Tech, yeah, Jaden Blue needs a lot more carries in 2024. So that's going to be fun to watch.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Sorry about that, Chip. You broke up there for a second. I caught the end of it there. You're talking about the dynamic with Jaden Blue and CJ Baxter. Yeah, there's no doubt they're going to need two backs, right? And listen, you got to love a little bit of that, you know, thunder and lightning dynamic. Not to say that CJ Baxter doesn't have his own breakaway ability of his own. We've seen him show flashes of it there, but no, I think you hit the nail on the head. You're not going to have, even though Sark hinted at it even entering this past year, right? At Big 12 Media Days, he talked about, hey, you know, we'll see whether we're going to have a bell cow or it's going to be running back by committee. I think at this point, you know enough, especially with the talent on this roster and talent in that room. Yeah, we saw enough of Jaden Blue to feel like that guy, it doesn't have to be 50-50, but you got to get him on the field because he's explosive. He's going to make plays.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be fun. And, you know, it seemed like by the end of the season, CJ Baxter got the first two series, then Jaden Blue would come in, and then it was whoever had the hot hand.
Sure.
Yeah. And against Iowa State, it was CJ Baxter. Against Texas Tech, it was Jaden Blue. And, you know, we'll see how it plays out in the spring and heading into the fall. The other interesting, you know, as you are looking to replace, you know, key guys. You mentioned Michael Kern, but Ryan Watts, you know, made the list really more for his play over the last two seasons. It wasn't the season he probably wanted to have this year. There were injuries, but also, you know, tough outings for Ryan, including the Sugar Bowl, five targets, five receptions, 131 yards given up. But Malik Muhammad looks like a ready-made walk-in boundary corner to me, Eric. I just love the confidence he plays with. I love that he loves to press. I think he's going to be a star. Obviously, Texas did not land his cousin, Jabbar Muhammad, who took the money and went to Oregon, Washington's rival. A lot of people thinking he might be going to Alabama with Kalen DeBoer, but no, he's going to Oregon. But Malik Muhammad, he's ready.
Chip, it's interesting, right? Because when we kind of were entering fall camp, right, there's this cluster of young cornerbacks, right? Manny Muhammad and Terrence Brooks. And then even I talk about, you know, guys like Gavin Holmes, of course, not young, but transferred in, and kind of see who's going to break out of that pack. Well, in my mind, you can't not be excited about what Malik Muhammad presented out there. A guy who showed not afraid to be left out there on an island, want to get up, you know, be physical, some guys, press on some guys, and go cover him. And yeah, you know, I mean, listen, I think Ryan Watts, I'm probably a little bit higher. I mean, granted, you saw Watts last year, and I thought Ryan, when he was at his most effective, was an all-around really, really good cornerback, but the injury certainly played a factor. And yeah, not the way you want to end the year, but, you know, certainly Ryan Watts was not the first cornerback to struggle against Jalen Polk, Romo Dunze, and others, right? So can't be too hard on him there. But yes, I mean, you got to feel confident about Malik Muhammad. And in my mind, still, just that group there with Muhammad and, you know, Gavin Holmes and Terrence Brooks as well, the secondary. At least the cornerbacks, you got to feel in good shape. And that's a group that I think Chip is going to be looking, no pun intended, to have a chip on their shoulder. You know, they certainly had some issues down the stretch. A lot of it you can attribute to, you know, better tackling, need to get guys on the ground. But I think as a whole, they're going to want to come out and really show, hey, you know, we're a talented group. We're better than some of our worst moments of 2023.
Yeah. Yeah. Secondary had a chance to really, I mean, it's going to be a ton of different personnel outside of Jahdae Barron and Malik Muhammad and Terrence Brooks. We know the safety position is going to be a do-over with the exception of Michael Taft, who's coming back, but gone are Jaron Thompson, Keaton Crawford. So that it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. You got Andrew Makuba coming in from Clemson. You know, Derek Williams obviously is the star on the rise. And so we'll get into that. We'll get into the secondary more as we continue along. But before we get to take it or leave it, I do want to touch on basketball, Eric. You know, since last week's podcast, Texas went up to BYU and just got lit up in the second half of that game and ended up losing by 12 and then had to turn around after, you know, being out west up in altitude and take on number 4 Houston Monday night at the Mood. And Houston controlled that game and looked like they were just gonna, you know, slowly, steadily beat down the Longhorns. And then Texas came out in the second half. I thought played one of their best halves of basketball this season. Good defensively, aggressive, taking it to the rack. After not shooting a single free throw in the first half, they ended up shooting 20. Now this game went to overtime. But Dylan Mitchell came alive. I thought Dylan Mitchell was a disaster at BYU. I thought he played one of his best halves of basketball, the second half of the Houston game. And, oh, Eric, Tyrese Hunter had the ball with a chance for Texas to take the lead in the final seconds. And turns it over. It, you know, obviously didn't come down to that, but it was an opportunity for Texas, because Texas really controlled the second half of that game. I mean, your thoughts. They end up losing 76-72 in overtime to Houston. But man, I didn't expect what I saw in the second half of that game.
Chip, neither did I. You know, through 20 minutes of that game, it looked like it was going to be a classic Kelvin Sampson Houston team, the team that is first in the nation in fewest points allowed. They entered that game allowing just 51.6 points per game, held Texas to only 25.
And that's insane, by the way.
It is.
51 points per game?
It is, especially in today's college basketball with the athletes and guys, you know, shooting the three ball. And listen, that is an incredible number. Both teams didn't shoot the ball particularly well, you know, through the majority of the first half. They were shooting under 40%, around, you know, even I'd say, if memory serves correctly, even under 35% through the majority of the first half. But yeah, it looked for all intents and purposes like Houston was going to just, you know, be able to come out, put the clamps down. Texas had their little run in the first half and in the first 10 minutes when they went up 10-9. But give credit to Rodney Terry and company. He felt that, you know, in his mind, he didn't see, you know, necessarily being any further adjustments, that they had a better, they were getting better looks at the basket as far as, you know, being in the paint, being able to drive, dribble, drive, penetrate, things of that nature. But Chip, I mean, first off, Dylan Mitchell, you talked about it. There was a stretch there where they went on a 17-6 run to cut the deficit and tie that ball game. Dylan Mitchell scored six straight buckets. He had a stretch there. We had 10 points, I believe two or three rebounds, a block, a steal. I asked RT postgame if that's the best stretch of basketball that Dylan Mitchell's played in his, you know, Texas career, considering the opponent, right? Considering the atmosphere. And RT wouldn't quite say that it was the best, but he said that that is what they think Dylan Mitchell's capable of being, right? I mean, Chip, first off, let's backtrack for a second. How many times do you ever see Dylan Mitchell miss a dunk? I mean, that guy dunks for fun in pregame just for bleeps and giggles. He had a chance to take the roof off of Moody Center and missed a dunk. It was the damnedest thing I think I've got. It's the one
breakaway tomahawk, and he clangs it off the front end of the rim. It was.
It's the one thing you think you wouldn't see from Dylan Mitchell. So I had to mention that. But listen, you know, we need to have a discussion, Chip. You have probably been ahead of it further than I have. Kendall Weaver, his defense was lauded by Kelvin Sampson postgame. Chip, don't know if you had a chance to catch that audio or not. Just unprompted, when talking about the guard play defensively, Kelvin Sampson said the guy who he really thinks is the best defensive guard on this team is Kendall Weaver. It feels he's really special. He feels that he plays with an athleticism for a defensive guard that has a chance to be one of the top defenders in the Big 12. And I just want to kind of group the cluster of games here together, right? Because I think, you know, on the score sheet, Kendall probably only had 5 points. But I believe, if memory serves me correct, he had 15 against BYU and was in double digits as well the game prior against Oklahoma in that win. I still think, Chip, that you have to start IT Horton for anyone who are rolling their eyes. Here's why I'm saying it, Chip. Here's the only reason, the main reason. The only reason, the
main
reason,
man, Eric is dying on this hill.
Here's the main reason I'm saying it. This Texas team isn't deep enough, Chip, to just have a guy out there who's not giving you anything. And we've already seen what IT off the bench looks like. His best games this year have come with him in the starting lineup. So, whether that's him as a starter only playing 20 minutes, because you saw that game ended, Chip, right? It was Asemus, Hunter, Weaver, Mitchell, and then some combination of Dessou or Shedrick going offense, defense. I think that's the five you close the game with, but I think this team just isn't deep enough to have a guy taking up not only just a roster spot, but a valuable roster spot, and you get what you'd seen before was that three-game stretch we hadn't scored a point. So I think you continue to start IT, but maybe Weaver's established that he's the guy you close with, Chip, And he I had said this to, you know, another person on the beat. My curiosity with Kendall was he a guy who does his value and impact diminish as he plays more minutes? I think you've kind of seen that a little bit with Brock Cunningham this year. I don't think it's the case. I think Kendall Weaver's value will only increase with more minutes, but he had another great outing. Just, and again, not everything shows up in the score sheet, but fighting for loose balls, you know, going up on the offensive boards, you know, just doing those little things that you've talked about for the past two podcasts. I'm sold, Chip.
Well, what was it in the BYU game? I think all of his rebounds were offensive rebounds. All five of them. He had, he's the one guy capable of face guarding the other team's best perimeter player for an entire game. And I think we're getting there. I mean, he made life difficult for Oklahoma's guards. I would like to have seen him, you know, face guarding Shed more. Jamal Shed, who was fantastic. Austin Kidd comes back home, lights up Texas, you know, 25 points and 8 rebounds. Here's the thing. If we're going to talk about, you know, Texas trying to find its identity, and you know what you're going to get from Max Asemus. You know what you're going to get from Dylan Dazoo. And I think you know what you're going to get from Kendall Weaver. You're going to get undying defensive effort and maybe an occasional, you know, plus in terms of offense. That needs to be, we need to know what Dylan Mitchell is going to give night in and night out. And he's a little bit like a hummingbird in that, you know, when he's locked in, it's fun to watch. It's energy, it's defense, it's rebounding. But he can get lost. And I thought in the BYU game, he just was lost. And I, the feel for the game, I don't know. He's still waiting for his coaches to tell him what to do, Eric. And he needs, at this point in his career, he needs to be the guy who feels the game and can relay the conversation to teammates. And he's not there yet. I hope he gets there fast, because he's a game changer. I mean, his abilities are unique and welcomed, because he's a guy who creates possessions. He create with his offensive rebounding. He cleans up a lot of messes. He's bringing the ball up the floor now, which is big time. He can grab a rebound and lead the break. That takes some pressure off of Asemus and Tyrese Hunter. Dylan Mitchell he needs to go from good to great. And I keep waiting for that to happen. We're coming up on the midway point of Big 12 play. But he was really, really good in the second half of that Houston game. And that's one that got away, Eric. You know, your thoughts on the Tyrese Hunter turnover there with, you know, half a minute left in the game.
Yeah, Chip, I'm going to sneak two thoughts here into one. First, the Tyrese Hunter turnover. It was tough, right? Because, listen, Tyrese is a guy who loves he's not afraid of the big moment, you know, definitely kind of wants the ball in his hand and be able to be a playmaker there. But I saw, you know, being in the building, it just looked like he kind of got ahead of himself. You know, he had too many thoughts running through as far as what to do in that moment, because you're right. It did, for lack of a better word, it looked ugly, but it wasn't, it just looked like a guy was just kind of out of control and not really sure what to do in that moment. Really quick on Dylan Mitchell. And, you know, Chip, you obviously covered Dylan Mitchell's recruitment when he signed with Texas. I don't know how many Longhorn fans may know this, but, you know, I'm from Tampa and I've seen Dylan Mitchell, you know, play. He's a guy who, Chip, when you talk about him just finding himself and getting to that next level, I think it's a byproduct. And I don't think D. Mitch would say this. He's still learning. And I think having a measure of continuity with RT, he's a guy, Chip, who 4 different high schools, 4 years, Bishop McLaughlin, Alonzo. He was at a school before Alonzo, I can't remember. Then, of course, goes to Montverde. if you're playing high school ball in Tampa at a, you know, private Catholic school, Bishop McLaughlin and Pasco, and then a public school in Alonzo, just go be Dylan Mitchell. Go be 6'8 and be more athletic than everybody, and you're fine, right? Then he goes to Mountain Verde, which of course is the legendary, you know, powerhouse program. And it's, all right, come here for 1 year and we'll get you to Division One. So I think you almost wish you could get him for another year, and you know, in all likelihood, that's not going to happen. But I think that is the best way I can explain Dylan Mitchell still kind of having those moments where it's like it goes from game to game. If it's unsurety or still not just knowing what to do and when to do it. But yeah, he's a guy who's just been bigger and more athletic than everybody for the bulk of his career. And now is really kind of having to learn that game. I think he'll develop it. You hope, for Longhorn fans' sake, it can be the second half of the Big 12 and into, you know, the conference tournament.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully he does what's best for him. Because you look at a guy like Kevin McCullough at Kansas, who came back this year after, you know, having a really, really good year last year. And it's kind of like Quinn Ewers' decision to come back. If the player doesn't feel like they've mastered everything they need to master at the college level before they go up, and they want to make sure that they've got a better sense of it before getting thrown into the cutthroat world of the business of pro basketball, which can mean G League, Europe. I think of PJ Tucker, who, you know, fell through the cracks, ended up going to Europe, got a what, 30-day contract with the Phoenix Suns and turned that into a incredibly profitable 13-year NBA career. But he was kind of an against all odds guy. Didn't help that he got a horrible DWI while he was in Phoenix. But you gotta know as the player if you're ready or not. And I think Dylan has a chance to be really something special. And again, we're coming up on the midway point of Big 12 play in his second year. I hope he just continues to do this, because the BYU game, and a lot of times in games, he just looks like he just doesn't have the feel for the game yet that I would expect at this point. And he loses his man, or he bites on the up fake and guys blow by him. And if I could jump like that, I'd want to jump every chance too, but, we'll see. We'll see. This team struggles with free throw shooting too, and that hurt him down the stretch. And yeah, I didn't expect that turnover from Tyrese Hunter, where he's kind of in a, you know, he jumps into the air. That's like stuff you see from a really young, player, but hey, Texas was right there, and they got to get over the hump again. They're playing TCU on Saturday at 1 on ESPN2. TCU beat that Houston team. TCU's number 25 in the nation. All right, Eric, you ready to get to some take it or leave it?
I am ready, CB.
All right. Don't go anywhere, folks. Take it or leave it up next. And if you're watching us on the Horns 24/7 YouTube channel, we will roll on. All right, Eric, who's serving it up first? Me?
You are, sir.
All right. A little take it or leave it here. At this point, a successful season for Rodney Terry and the Longhorns would be making the NCAA tournament. Take it or leave it.
Chip, I am taking it. I understand that this team has been, you know, almost just maddening to watch at times, right? But and maybe it's a byproduct of being around this team every day, but I still see a ton of talent on this roster. When I look at a guy like Max Asemus, you've talked about the fact that he's now just climbing up the NCAA scoring list. Max is a guy who has not had trouble getting his shots at the Power Five level, you know, the big time level here of basketball.
And he played a little D last night. late against Shed.
Dylan Mitchell, Dylan Dessou. We can run down the names. I think, Chip, especially with this being a tough, very tough Big 12 league, they can find their way to 8-10. I think they may get the nod depending on what those wins look like. But yes, a successful season is making the tournament. I do not believe this is one that you can look back on and feel great about if it's an NIT team, Chip. What about you?
Yeah, I agree. I'm going to take this. They weren't in any bracketology projections 2 weeks ago, and then they got the win over Baylor and back to, and then OU on the road, and suddenly they're like in the play-in game. Last night would have helped a lot if they could have taken down Houston. That would have been a really nice resume builder for the Longhorns. But yeah, at this point, just getting into that field, I think that would be a successful season for this team.
All right, take it or leave it. Number two, former Longhorn wideout Kyle Shanahan finally takes home the big one, the Lombardi Trophy, wins the Super Bowl as coach against Andy Reid and the Kansas City Chiefs.
Chip, you know what? You know what? I'm going to leave this, and I listen. Maybe I'm too close to it as a Lions fan because I watched intently the 49ers game against the Packers the week before in the wild card round, and then of course watched the divisional round, and then the NFC championship game. And there's something off about the 49ers. I don't know what it is that's causing them to come out so flat or get outplayed for 2-3 quarters, but Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, they look like they're figuring it all out. So, and now you got Isaiah Pacheco a couple weeks to get his injuries healed up, because you do have to run the football against the 49ers. They can be had. But I just think that I think the Chiefs are going to get it done. Eric, how about you?
Chip, I hate to be blasphemous here on, the 40 acres, but that guy from Texas Tech, he's Jordan to me. And as far as quarterbacking goes, until I'm proven otherwise, I saw my Bucks get a Super Bowl, and guess what? That had nothing to do with Patrick Mahomes' play on that day. I'm sorry. I'm not betting against that guy until I see him taken out in the big-time moment. So I'm leaving it, Chip.
Yeah. All right, take it or leave it. Number three, after landing Tia Savea from Arizona, Texas does not need to land another defensive tackle in the transfer portal. Take it or leave it, Eric.
This was the toughest one for me. I am going to say, if the answer is they don't, then I am going to take it. I am going to buy on the combination of Sidir Mitchell or Jare Bledsoe or Aaron Bryant or Zach Swanson, that quartet of rising defensive tackles stepping up to the plate. Yes, I just made the comment that it's a lot to ask for AC and Vernon to play as high a football as T'Vondre Sweat and Byron Murphy. But I think we saw enough, Chip, whether it was the things we were hearing from practices or just the few moments, a few glances we got at these guys. I think they're chomping at the bit. I think getting a run stuffer in Tia Savea is key, and I'm taking it that those guys are going to be ready to step up. Chip, what about you?
Okay, I'm going to leave this for the moment because of the next transfer portal window. And, the Michigan players, Harbaugh, it took them so long for Harbaugh to make up his mind that, yes, Michigan players can be in the transfer portal for 30 days, but no one can accept them to enroll in this semester. So I want to see what is in the portal come May before I answer this definitively. So I'll leave it for now. And let's see if those Michigan defensive tackles are still feeling good about Ann Arbor, come May. All right. Good stuff. Lots of fun. Thank you, first and foremost, for everybody listening to this episode of the Flagship Podcast. I am Chip Brown for Eric Henry. Until next time, we'll see you over at horns247.com. Make sure you please like and subscribe to the Horns247 YouTube channel and give us a nice review wherever you're listening to this podcast. Until next time, stay safe and keep the faith.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus. Gather your besties.
We are very exclusive.
And get ready.
Mom, go make snacks.
For sure, Regina, yeah.
For the movie that hits like a bus. In a good way.
No one died.
Mean Girls.
Rated PG-13.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.